For instance, medical research deals with problems that are so urgent and difficult that proposals of new cures must often be based on medical statistics, without understanding how the cure works. But even if a new cure were suggested by experience with many patients, it would probably be met with skepticism if one could not see how it could possibly be explained reductively in terms of sciences like biochemistry and cell biology. Suppose that a medical journal carried two articles reporting two different cures for scrofula, one by ingestion of chicken soup and the other by a king's touch. Even if the statistical evidence presented for these two cures had equal weight, I think that the medical community and everyone else would have very different reactions to the two articles. Regarding chicken soup, I think that most people would keep an open mind, reserving judgment until the cure could be confirmed by independent tests. Chicken soup is a complicated mixture of good things, and who knows what effect its contents might have on the microbacteria that cause scrofula. On the other hand, whatever statistical evidence were offered to show that a king's touch helps to cure scrofula, readers would tend to be very skeptical, suspecting a hoax or a meaningless coincidence, because they would see no way that such a cure could be explained reductively. How could it matter to a microbacterium whether the person touching its host was properly crowned and anointed or the eldest son of the previous monarch? Even in the Middle Ages, when it was commonly believed that a king's touch would cure scrofula, kings themselves seemed to have had their doubts about this. As far as I know, in all the medieval struggles over disputed successions, as between Plantagenet and Valois or York and Lancaster, no claimant to the throne ever tried to prove his title by demonstrating the curative power of his touch. A biologist today, who protested that this cure needed no explanation because the power of the king's touch is an autonomous law of nature, as fundamental as any other, would not get much encouragement from his colleagues, because they are guided by a reductionist worldview that has no place for such an autonomous law. The same is true throughout all the sciences. We would not pay much attention to a proposed autonomous law of macroeconomics that could not possibly be explained in terms of the behavior of individuals, or to a hypothesis about superconductivity that could not possibly be explained in terms of the properties of electrons and photons and nuclei. The reductionist attitude provides a useful filter that saves scientists in all fields from wasting their time on ideas that are not worth pursuing. In this sense, we are all reductionists now. Chapter 4. Quantum Mechanics and Its Discontents. A player put a ball on the table and hit it with the cue. Watching the rolling ball, Mr. Tompkins noticed, to his great surprise, that the ball began to spread out.